Some of you ought to be real glad somebody paid some money. Some of you are thinking, how did all this get here? It would be amazing if we did it like other places. Charge you to keep children. Charge you for admittance. Charge you for parking. Charge you for everything. A lot of times we forget that our church, and a healthy church, just does these things. And it does it because on a regular basis, on a consistent basis, people give. When I began the process of looking at all that we're going to work on in our lives over the start of this year, this is always the toughest one. There's no issue that I'm going to bring up that's going to cause more controversy or cause people to, oh, I don't want to hear this, I don't want to. But there's no issue that has to be dealt with more than your finances. It doesn't matter if you're just started a job and you make $130 or $100 a week. It starts there. I've told you 1,000 times that my giving started years ago with a $7 check to God every week out of a $70 check that I made at work. That's where it all began. Luckily and thankfully, I can say, you know what, God is always faithful, and I've continued to grow and be blessed. But it's all because of the process by which God has established. Now, we've talked about over this situation, over this course of time, we've talked about our different needs in a makeover. We need a makeover of our time. We need a makeover of our bodies. We need a makeover in our relationship with God. And this morning is no different. This morning we need a relationship, or we need a makeover in how we treat our finances or our stewardship. Now, let me explain it this way. One guy said it like this, and I like it. He said, we go to school to earn it. We spend 40 to 60 hours a week to make it. We plan time to spend it. We worry all the time over it. We daydream about more of it. We argue over it, sometimes sue each other over it, and divorce over it. Despair over the lack of it. Love it to such a degree we'll cause a crime to get it. Absence of it causes nightmares. We call it the root of all evil. And we call it, it can do great good. You can't ignore it. It's called money. Look at the person beside you and say, it's money. And of all the issues that people come up into my office and all the issues that I have to deal with, this is 99% of the time the root cause, whether it's marriages, whether it's simply just life, the stresses, blah, blah, I'm so stressed out. And when I get to the bottom of it, they're overextended in just about every area of their life, and they've got no peace and no joy and no comfort because they're trying to buy it or purchase it or possess it, and they can't understand why, well, now I've got all this stuff, and I've got a house, I've got this, and I'm not any happier. I'm more miserable now. Well, you were going to be, because those things never give genuine and true happiness. Let me tell you what the Bible says when we talk about simply finances. Go with me to Luke 16. Luke 16, verses 10 through 12. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. In other words, if someone looks at you and says, boy, if I just had more, I'd do better. No, you wouldn't. I've never found anybody that can't spend what they make. I've never met anybody that couldn't do it. They were just as happy driving the little Hyundai as they were driving the BMW. But the fact is when they got the more money, they moved up to the BMW because they deserved it. They're going to spend whatever it is that comes in. And you'll learn not to spend what's not there. And he that is unjust in the least is also unjust in much. In other words, if I can't be faithful with that little bit, then I won't learn to be faithful if I get more in my hands. So look at the person beside you and tell them that wherever you are this morning, this is your starting point. You may have 12 credit cards. You may be $800,000 in debt, but it's your starting point. Wherever it is in your life, this is your starting point. It's not a matter of if I win the lottery, I'm going to get it in order. If I can just get ahead, if I can just get my tax refund, man, my tax refund's going to put me back to level. No, it's not. Because you'll need a tire, and you're going to need something, and something else is going to happen, and all of a sudden you're going to be right back for the next 9 months back in a hole. Waiting for next year's, well, if I can just get that $2,000, man, I'm telling you, that's going to fix my problems. No, your problem started in the fact that you were $2,000 over what you had in your accounts. Now, we're going to have to deal with this, and you've got to deal with it seriously, otherwise it won't work. You can get as spiritual as you want, but the devil will wear you out financially. He will stress you to the point you will never do anything for God. And in fact, you know where most of our weight gain comes from? Stress. You can work out all you want, but if you stress all the time, guys, this is where it accumulates. It just has a magical place. It stops. You don't go to your feet. Your feet don't get any bigger. It just stops right there. And you can pop Relicor or whatever other type of diet pill all you want, but the more you stress, the more you're going to have. And ladies, I'm not a lady. I don't know where it all collects on you. You just have to pick your spot. I'll leave that one up to y'all. I don't have no experience in that one. I can only tell you as us guys, I can tell you what happens. Our feet don't grow. We broaden. We don't get any taller. We expand. And it's caused because of stress. Verse 11, if therefore you be not faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you your trust or true riches? Verse 12, and if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? 1 Timothy 6 says it this way. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we will carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therefore content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and to many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. A little further. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness. Fight the good fight of faith, lay hold on eternal life. Wherefore thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. Go with me in your Bibles to Proverbs. Got to go with Proverbs. Proverbs always says something good about money. Proverbs 8 through 9 says this way, remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor what? Now that doesn't seem like the American dream. I don't want to be rich and I don't want to be poor. But the Proverbs, the Solomon, the wisest man said, a wise man would say, I would want neither one. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? In other words, if I get full enough, I don't need God anymore. That's why rich people are hard to reach. Because they don't need the church. What do I need you to pray for me? I can get the best doctor on the phone call. What do I need you for? But now here's the problem. Or lest I be poor. Now if you come in too poor, you start robbing people. And you have to lie. And you have to cheat. And you have to do whatever. Because you ain't got enough money to pay all your bills. And you got to call so-and-so and tell them the check's in the mail when you know you don't even own a checkbook. But in your mind, you're thinking, I plan to get a checkbook. And when I get a checkbook, you're the first check I'm writing. So if you're too poor, you start stealing and lying and you develop that lifestyle. That's why it's very hard. We call it the poor mentality. And usually when people come into the church, that's normally where they come from, a poor mentality. And it's a hard mentality to break. Because if they get their income tax checks, everybody gets new tennis shoes, and we go rent about 8-12 movies that we hadn't got to see yet, and we just burn through it in about a week, and then we go back to poverty. That's our mindset. That's the way we think. I already got it spent. And it's hard to break that mentality. And we go right back to lying, stealing, borrowing from our relatives. And then we can't go to family reunion because we owe everybody money. And we don't even want to show our face. And we just play like we're sick. And we go through all the details. Can't even go to church. We borrowed from so many people at church. We done got to a point to where we can't even show our face anymore. I know this is nobody you know. But it does happen in the world. We learn to lie. We learn to do whatever we got to do to get by. That we become good at it. That's who we are. And it's all started because we cannot handle what is somebody else's to begin with. And we keep clinging and saying, God, if you just give me my own stuff. And God says, you can't handle what I've given you on loan. I gave you a little check to live by, and I want to see if you can handle that little check. And now you are 10 credit cards, 3 overdrafts, 2 closed bank accounts, can't get a loan, can't get anything in the hole, and you're wanting your stuff now. It doesn't work that way. You've got to learn to handle what has been given, and when you learn to handle what has been given, then more will be given to you. I have stuff now. I'm blessed. I sometimes don't like to talk. I'm ashamed sometimes. I have boats in the yard. I have all the... But you know what the difference is? It took me 30 years nearly to grow to where I could handle boats in the yard or campers or anything else. In fact, I don't think of missing on Sunday to go do it. I don't think of missing out on what I'm supposed to do. It's just part of the process that He gives. And when He gives, I think of how in the world can I use this for Him? How in the world can... The funnest time we had last year on that boat was when we got to take people from the church out, and when the mission group came from Florida, we took them all out there. That's one of the few times I even took the boat out into the water. Because it's only given so that I can find an opportunity to do good. The only time I ride my motorcycle is usually when the group rides. Why? Because it ain't like I wake up every day thinking, oh, I got a motorcycle, I can do what I want. No, it's the fact that I already know what my life's supposed to do. And now if I get a chance to ride on that Sunday and two new guys ride with us or a new couple and I get a chance to talk with them or share with them and get to meet them. Yesterday me and Taylor had to get gas. And as soon as we got out of the truck, one of the guys we ride with said, hey, Tim. I looked over and there he was sitting on his motorcycle, gassing up. And I have a relationship with somebody I never would have. But now it took years to do that. If God had given me that thing 10 years ago or 20 years ago, I probably wouldn't be here today. But God said, Tim, I won't hold anything good from you. I'll give you stuff that you can call your own. But you first got to learn to handle what I call mine. That's the key. God's not holding out on you. But you think of how you've handled what He's loaned you so far. And it'll be a pretty good answer to how you handle if He gave you your stuff. We'd be like the prodigal. We'd burn through it. We'd be chewing on corn husk somewhere, wondering why God don't give us any more. Let me show you, as you go to Hebrews, the 13th chapter and verse 5. Let your conversation be without covetousness. And be content with such things as we have. For He hath said, I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee. These are money promises in God. Now, I'm not going to read all the money promises that everybody else likes to read. And I'm not going to tell you that, you know what, it's going to be pressed down, shaken together, run. All of that stuff is true, but it works in a process that a lot of us have no understanding of. Have no understanding. And until we get that understanding, until we get a lifestyle that handles what has been given and we can be content with it and be happy with it, whether it's much or little, then God can't share anymore. I mean, we do everything, and there's all types of help books. I was looking at some of these. There's God's Financial Covenant, and Lord, I've got all kinds of them. Your Money Counts. If you can get into the spiritual side of it, we can get Giving and Receiving, Building Your Financial Foundation. There's even Everlasting Rewards. Are you investing in eternity? Shoot, we can even imagine and do financial road trips that will get us to security. We can get really big time if we want to get into people like Dave Ramsey and buy their books, and all they want you to do is to read the book, and then at the back it has the same thing every time. It has a budget. I'll save you a whole lot of time if you want just some advice. Don't buy the book. Don't buy nobody's book. Just go to the library. They probably got a financial book. Go to the copier and copy the budget out of the back. It costs 20 cents a copy. And you don't have to buy all his good-looking pictures. You don't have to buy him cutting up a credit card. And you just need the budget. Look at the person beside you and say, you don't need the pictures. You don't need all the goofy ideas. You just need the budget. Yeah. That's the whole book. I mean, he's going to talk about finances and talk about this. It doesn't matter if it's him or somebody else. We can even get real, even more spiritual. There's people like Larry Burkett, and they put out theirs. And guess what's in the back of it? A budget. You can read all of it you want, but eventually you're going to get to the back of the book, and there ain't nothing in the back of the book but a budget. And so we begin to understand, then, Pastor, why can't I get there? There are three things that are holding you back, and most people that I deal with on a daily basis, from being able to be financially happy. Just be financially happy. The first one is this. It is simply the fact that I have stretched the truth and the white lies, and I have received the high-powered advertisement. Guys, I'm not telling you something I don't know about. I was a food broker. I represented the state of Mississippi for Winn-Dixie and several other Piggly Wigglies out of Alabama. I represented over 20, 30 different companies, whether it's Clorox, SC Johnson, all their companies. I sold $100,000 Kool-Aid racks. That's what I did. And my job was to go in and to be the best advertising. When we set stores, it was war. Don't look at it any other way. It was war. I wanted 6 rows for my thing, and they wanted 3 rows, and we would constantly fight who would get as many rows. Because if I can put my stuff out, spread out like this, and you got 2 little rows in the corner, guess which one's going to sell the most? So we fought for space. We fought for all. That was my life. That's what I did. I got in a car with all the credit cards, with all this company car, and I got in there every week to go to war. And I didn't even come home but 2 or 3 nights a week during that time. And my job was to go out and fight and to trick people and to convince people that Windex will clean your windows whiter than anything. And if you ain't got Windex, you got dirty windows, and it's nasty, and you need to trade whatever you're doing in for Windex, because Windex works best. And so in our lives, the first problem that we always have is the pressure that comes from whether it's the type of car you're going to buy. This one's got that much warranty. This one's 100,000 miles. Hey, this one's got the look. It doesn't matter even if it's Cadillac now. I love the new Cadillac advertisements. Cadillacs are them old cars. That's what they are. Old rich cars. Now they're trying to remodel that. Now you got this guy riding a motorcycle 90 miles an hour. You know, what happened to the... And I thought, that is so cool, because what they're trying to do, and I understand, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get young people to buy Cadillacs. And so if young people are trying to buy Cadillacs, then we can sell more Cadillacs. Now, they may not need a Cadillac. They may not even want a Cadillac. But our job is really not to care about that. Our job is to sell a... It's our job. I've been in those meetings with Kool-Aid and other people and different companies. They would drive us to Birmingham. We'd meet in this big boardroom. They'd show us videos. And you know what the whole thing was? Guys, just do it. Just stretch it any way you can. You know, don't lie. You know, we can't come out and lie, but we can, you know, present it in such a way. In fact, when the Super Bowl takes place here in a short time, people will pay millions for 30 seconds so that you will buy their stuff. It doesn't matter if you're drinking the wrong beer. You drink this beer, you got to ride a bike while you're drinking it because it's so much fattening. Y'all ain't seen those commercials? Yeah. Guy on the bicycle, right, drinking his beer, and he's drinking, and you're thinking, but the whole image is if you drink that, you're going to get fat, but drink our beer and you'll stay skinny. I got a good one. Don't drink either one. Oh no, that would ruin the advertisement. We want you to drink, but drink responsibly. We want you to drink 3 cases at your house. Don't drive. Yeah, you got to drink responsibly. Don't quit drinking, just drink responsibly. It's all advertising. In fact, Christmas time is one of the funniest times to me. Because you know how they judge whether they're winning the battle against you? There's a phrase they use all the time during Christmas. They'll say it's up or down. Anybody remember the words? consumer spending. And they say it almost like it's a good thing. They'll say, well, how is Christmas this year? Well, consumer spending looks like it's going to go up. Every household looks like they're going to spend about $117 a person, which is compared to $113 last year, which means we stole more money from them this year. No, they don't go that far. They make it sound like, all right, consumer spending is up. What they're really saying is, we have gotten more money out of their pockets this year than we did last year. And we really could care less whether they need any of the junk. We don't care if they put it in a storage shed or throw it away. We don't care. We just want the money. And it looks like more money's coming in this year than last year. And we don't catch it. And we don't realize that this whole world system is set up on the fact of trying to convince you that you are lacking something in your life. Right. And if you don't get it, and you don't wear it, and you don't have it, if you girls ain't got a pair of Uggs, then you just don't look good. I hate to break it to you. Them Uggs is the ugliest thing I ever seen in my life. I don't know who convinced you they look good, but anybody wearing snow boots in the middle of a mall with a pair of shorts on, that is dumb. My mom would have whooped me. But it lets you know people will do as dumb. Feet sweating, 70 degrees, pair of shorts on, and you got a pair of snow boots on. It's stylish. And the UGG company's grinning and saying, you wear them, doll, you wear them. 90 degrees, they're going to say, you just buy a smaller shoe size. Just keep sweating them feet down. You laugh, but most of you ladies in here got a pair. The first time I saw them, I thought, that took some awesome advertising. It took some incredible advertising ability to get somebody to put snow boots on with a pair of shorts and to tell them they look good. It took incredible. You just had to be off the chain. Whoever that guy was moved up. He moved up the ladder. He has a front desk right now, I promise you. Who are you? I'm the guy that convinced people that Uggs would look good with a pair of shorts. You the man. You the man. And so we stretch the truth. We get through all of this situation. If I don't have the right type of tennis shoe, I can't run right. If I ain't got this, I can't do this. And I got to have this, and nothing feels right. Everything that you deal in this world with is about trying to convince you you don't have it right. That's what advertisers do. You drive the wrong car, you eat the wrong food, you brush your teeth with the wrong toothpaste. In fact, you don't even use the right toothbrush. Everything in your life is just a little short. You just need to spend a little more and get a little more, and life will be better. And the Bible says happiness comes with contentment in what I have right now. Totally contrary. If I've got food, if I've got any kind of clothes at all on my body, then I ought to be happy. But a lot of you don't know how old this stuff is. It looks fine. Nothing's hanging out. It looks good. The second problem, before I say this, go to this. Watch this video. It'll give you some insight into it. Come on. problem is that the advertising whets our whistle. It gets us thinking about it, really wanting it. And then the problem is we realize if we ever sit down that we don't have it to go do it. We can't afford that car. We can't afford that new hat. We really can't afford that. Well, the world has come up with a wonderful plan. And it's called credit. I mean, you don't even have to own it to get it. You don't even have to have it. In fact, if you have a steady job, we'll cash a check that ain't even been made yet. I mean, you haven't even worked to make this check yet, but you know what? You go ahead. We're going to give you a month in advance. You just keep sending it with some interest, and we're going to pay it back. We spend not just what we have, but to get all that we want, we have to spend what we don't have. We have to find one credit card, and when that credit card is maxed out, we have to go find another one or transfer it. And some of us end up transferring or retransferring credit cards all the time just to keep interest rates below 20%. Look at the person beside you and say, "Pastor loves you." We have check cashing, advance, credit cards. We can get loans for anything. I was talking to someone the other day, and they got a loan on their lawnmower. And the lawnmower don't even run. But they went to the bank and said, "Hey, I got a lawnmower. It's such and such. Well, hey, we'll give you $200 or $300 or $400 for that on a loan." The stuff that they're loaning, the stuff that they're even getting loans for, can't even be repaid. Even if I buy a car and get a loan on the car, you understand? If you go refinance that thing once you've paid it off, do you realize that it's not worth the money? It is depreciating at such a fact that by the time it's paid, you don't have anything. We're a generation or two past the Great Depression. And because of that, we are a people that do not know what it's like to live in any type of poverty at all. "Oh, bro, Lord, I know what it's..." No, no. If Sister Walker was here right now, she'd tell you that here's how she survived. She went out in the woods and caught rabbits, and she would trade rabbits for the neighbor down the road who had chickens. And when they got tired of eating rabbits, they'd go trade them for some chickens. And when the people got tired of eating chicken, would trade it for rabbits. And that's how they survived during their time of the Great Depression. I can carry you to my grandfather and others who worked all day for a quarter, just simply trying to find a job that would pay one quarter, just something that would buy meal just so they could have watered cornbread and whatever they could grow just to survive. We don't have any idea of poverty. And because of it, we feel like we're entitled now to simply have it, even if we can't afford it. Don't feel bad. We run a government the same way. We don't have the money. It don't matter. Print some more. And we've raised a generation that somehow thinks that we're entitled, even if we don't possess it. I want to read this to you. I want to show you some of the results of this. And this is the most startling. Remember I told you that most people that come into my office, and I've got to hurry, most people that come into my office, it's always usually about finances eventually. Even when I talk about marriages, here I'll show you how true that is. They just did a research, and Lord, I wish they'd just asked me, but you know it in your gut, and you've seen it in the splintered marriages around you. Finance-related tensions, however that you define them, raise the risk of divorce. A new study at Utah University attempts to qualify the risks. This finds couples who reported disagreeing about finances once a week, just once a week. If we talked about finances and fussed about it once a week, do you know that our divorce rate went up 30%? That's fact. You have a 30% higher chance of not living together if you get into it once a week about finances. In fact, it will go all the way up if you do it almost every day. It will go up almost to about 120 to 180%. It's almost a given fact that you won't make it if you constantly, your conversations are about finances. And we don't have enough. And you need to get a better job. And this becomes an everyday thing. Understand, marriages will not make it. Professor Drew looked at responses from about 2,800 couples surveyed in 1987. And in this survey, both husband and wives were asked separately how often they disagreed with their spouses over chores, in-laws, spending time together, sex, money, all the different categories. These same responders were contacted again several years later in 1992 and asked if they were still married. Of all these common things couples fight about, more money disputes were the best tangents of divorce. For wives, disagreements over finances and sex were good predictors of divorce. But now here's the thing, guys. If we're trying to make money and stressed out, guess what we don't care about? And so it becomes a financial issue, and then it becomes a physical issue, and then the wife says, I ain't getting nothing nowhere. I'm out of here. For men, finances, but husbands' financial disagreements were the only type of disagreement that predicted whether they would get a divorce or not. When men feel like everything's about money and all I am is a paycheck and da-da-da-da-da, do you know they're not going to last much longer? And nobody did it to us, and nobody made it. It's just the fact that we bought a house, we bought a car, we got this, we got that, and now we got to pay for it. And we're stuck in this life, and we've got to live in it, and we've got to have it. So just buckle up and ride it out. And I want to tell you, 10 years of riding it out, of not having any fun, and always fussing over money, never ends good. These findings were presented last month, and this is where I just heard this, at an annual conference of the National Council on Family Relations, and appeared in the State of Our Union's report on marriage, money, released today at the University of Virginia. The world is just starting to come to the conclusion that, you know what? All the credit cards and all the advertising and all of us, consumer spending is destroying the family. It's destroying the family. If you can't enjoy, I don't care if it's just when me and my wife were first married, you know, we tell you the greatest dates we had? Greatest dates we had was buying a pack of hamburger meat or sausage and getting some, making some Rotel and pouring it over chips and renting one movie and sitting on a floor eating that. To us, that was it. Now with three kids and all the hectic life and all of this, do you know I just like to eat nachos? I'd like to just sit down long enough and just have it peace and quiet long enough to eat a nacho. We run at such a pace and so fast. And if we remember our lives, the happiest we ever were was when we were just getting by, eating a piece of chicken at the Quick Stop and just going along and just living life and just enjoying life. We didn't have two nickels to rub together, but we were happy people. But somehow when we started adding all the load and all the things we had to have and all the Christmas, do you know in January and February, that's the number one time when divorces are filed? Right after they get the rings and right after they get all... Because the problem is, right after they get the rings and right after that, Santa Claus pays for it. And that workshop cost a lot more than what people think. And they realized a month after we done give all the presents and I say I love you and I hope you have a great Christmas, a month later when the bill comes in, I don't want to live with you no more. I can't put up with this no more. It's too much stress. Number three, the thing that causes us the greatest problem and it keeps us bound to this is the third thing, and it's our inability to set and keep adequate budgets. That's the key. Remember what I said about all these books? They're all the same in one way. At the end of every one of them, there's always a what? Always. There's always a budget. Now, in this room, there are people in here who have never budgeted. There are people in here who have started budgets but failed. And there are people in here who have had a budget and stick to a budget. My motorcycle, I brought it in a couple weeks ago. And when I brought it in, I was talking about all the things that shines. And but you know, my motorcycle has a flaw. I got to get it fixed, but it has a flaw. I don't have the money to fix it. It'll just have to keep going. But here's the flaw. My odometer will tell me how many miles the bike has gone in its life. It'll say 21,860-something miles. Okay. But now if I match the trip and try to get it set to 000 when I fill it up with gas so that I can know how far I've actually gone the last gas tank, it won't do it. It's broke. So what I have to do is when I fill up with gas, I have to remember, okay, when I filled up, it was 21,860 miles. Okay, it'll go about 140 miles. So that means at 22,000, when it hits 22,000, I got to get gas. And so I stress all the time looking down. Was that 21? Is that 22? What was that? And there are people. And do you know how stressful that is? And how every day I'm thinking, okay, I got to remember how I remember what have I wrote a check for? When did I get gas last? And there are people that live their financial lives the same way. No gauge telling them, they just put some in the bank and they start writing checks. Or they don't even do that. They just put it in one pocket and the other pocket and they start spending and they start buying. How much money I got? I know somebody stole some of my money. Somebody stole some of my money. Because I know I had more than that. Because we got no gauge. We've got nothing that tells us, stop. And we live our lives just like if we didn't have a gauge on our gas. If I took you out there right now and your gas gauge didn't work and you crunk it up and it didn't move and you had to think, Lord, what was it before I crunk that thing? Was it a half? Was it a quarter? How far can I get on a half a tank? God, I can't remember if I filled it up. You would have that thing fixed. You wouldn't handle the stress of trying to worry whether I got gas, don't have gas. But yet here we go every week of our lives, not sure if whether we got $5, don't have $5, whether we can pay that bill, can't pay that bill, have no idea exactly how much money we actually have floating in and out and checks here and there. Don't keep any steady checkbook, don't keep any budget, don't keep anything, don't really know how much we can spend. We just spend till somebody says you can't. Till we get that letter from the bank that says, oh, by the way, next check you owe us $40 extra because you went over with a couple. Now we owe $40 more because we didn't realize that we didn't have it. I know there's nobody in here that lives this way. I'm just telling you there's people in this world that do. And because of a lack of budget, they stress out, they worry. It ain't a lack of money. Everybody in here makes money. But whether it's $100 or $1,000 or $100,000, it doesn't matter the amount. I told you when I started out, it was $70. That wasn't mine, that was God's own loan. Tim, can you handle $70? I don't know, God. He said, let's see if you can handle $70. And let me show you how budgets have to work. Because most of you think you know how a budget works, but you don't. You don't. I know how a budget works. Well, you figure out how much you're spending, and you figure out how much you're making, and you can't spend more than you make. Wrong. I'm going to explain to you real quick how a budget works. First, you write down your income. What do you make? It's very simple. $227. Okay, that's what you make per week. Figure that for the year. Second, figure how much you're going to give to God's work. That's the second step in a budget. See, this t-shirt says tithe. For a cleaner, fresher soul, give 10% or more for best results. This church operates on a budget. You ever see anybody come up here on Sunday morning and say, guys, if y'all don't give now, we're going to turn some lights off and I just don't see how we're going to run it into red. You ever heard us say that? No, here's how we do it. We sit down once a year and it is an ugly mess. I've got a lot of my friends that go to this church who are on the board. And that board is not to run the church. Our board at the church does one major job each year. October, November, we go for about two or three meetings and we sit down and here's the content. Who getting what? And we have to come up with how much is actually probably going to come in. And we don't even budget off of everything coming in. We take a certain part and we budget off of that and we say we can't even count the rest. Now, that's how much we're going to have. Let's make it work. But we can't do this. We can't do that. That's great. Whatever we can do, we're going to make sure ministries are done. We're going to make sure we give to all these things. Everybody's taken care of. We're not going to sit around here and do fundraisers every week to try to keep youth money and kids' church money and this money and that money. We only have a couple times a year that we ask you to look, your kids are going to go to camp. It's going to cost, it costs a lot more than 90 bucks or whatever to send your kids to camp. But we've kept it right there and we said, look, just let the family work on that part. We'll handle the rest. You budget that in the church. They're giving. We're going to make sure it's taken care of. Gas money and all the stuff it takes and bus keep and all that stuff. We're going to make sure all of it's done. We're going to budget and make sure that it's done. First thing that I do is I write down how much I'm going to make. And second, I decide what I give to God. And most of us don't do that. Or if we do it, we do it in an odd way. Can I show you how most of us give to God? Watch this video.
I give to God by enjoying what He has given me. Okay? I mean, do you really think He expects something back? Now, I know there's a lot of people at church that would not understand this line of reasoning. That's why, just to make things simple and not to cause any controversy, I like to carry what I call the little empty envelope, all right? You see, when the plate gets passed, I bloop, put it in there like that. The deacon's counting the money. They only know me as the crazy empty envelope guy, but the people sitting around me, clueless. I win, they win, God wins. No one gets hurt because no one knows.
God knows.
Huh? Let me ask you a question, huh? How's your mutual fund?
Hey,
for that matter, how's all your funds? Has the fund left your funds? Huh? Has your do-re-mi taken a W-A-L-K, huh? What if I told you that I knew about an investment you could make that the return would be mind-boggling? And it's promised. It's guaranteed. I know what you're saying. There's no guarantees. This one's guaranteed, okay? Malachi 3:10. So it says in the Old Testament, it says, test me, give to God, and He will give you back. It goes like this. I give this, He gives this. I give this, He gives this. I give this. I'm right up there. He keeps giving. I can't outgive God. How crazy is that? Do I love Him? Sure, whatever. I'm just saying, if you give, He gives back. I tithe. But just not like in the form of a 10% check, per se. Let me tell you what I mean. When I go to church on a Sunday morning, they're selling donuts, I buy some. Boom. That's a tithe. When my whole Sunday school class wants donuts, and I have the goodness of my heart, buy a whole bunch for the Sunday school class, boom. That's another tithe. But it's not about me spending money. It's about the smile on people's faces. That, my friends, is tithe enough for me. Case in point, the church was having date nights where we could take our spouse out for an evening, and they were charging $25 for child care. Boom shakalaka tithe. I'll tell you what the biggest tithe was. I spent over $100 on our meal, and my wife was grinning ear to ear. That, my friend's a tithe. I would like to give. I would, okay? But everything right now is just crazy. I mean, just crazy, you know? I mean, not normal crazy, really crazy, you know? And if after I paid my bills and took care of the things that I need and want, then I would consider giving something, but not now is crazy. We're going to give later. We've already talked about it. I mean, down the road, we'll be crazy givers, but right now is just crazy.
Yeah, I have money, that's a fact. But you know what? It's a heart thing between me and the Lord and the pastor, because He needs to know what I'm giving now that we have this little building campaign going on, if you know what I'm saying. And pastor, I'd give a little bit more. I'd give a little something if you'd have that music minister sing a couple more hymns now and then, huh? Hey, what's this? Watch this. Is that a Benjamin? I think it is. Benji likes hymns. Come on, you want it? Come on, pastor, do what I say, huh?
Oh, in my life, Lord, be glorified in me. I put money in the plate. Wait. Look what I have here. My poor doesn't interfere. that everyone can hear how I give with cheer, that everyone could be like me.
You meet all types of givers. I run into them every day. They've got their own agenda, whether they're trying to trade a tenth for a 60 or 100%, whether they're convinced themselves that, you know what, it's a good investment, or it's like life insurance policy. Whatever it is, it's not correct. I give just because He's first. And the moment He doesn't become first in my life, then it really doesn't matter what I give at all. God said, Tim, here's a system. I want to save the world, and I chose the church to do it. I want you to find a church, and I want you to give a tenth to that church. Rest of it's yours. You want to go play at the arcade and do them little claw things, try to win you a teddy bear, you just spend all that 90% on anything you want. You can go drink it and go to the casino and try to make you 10 times as much. I don't care what you do with that, Tim, but don't rob me. Well, God, if I pay everything and I get everything, then I'm going to get... No, no, Tim. I won't be second and I won't be third in your life. You will adjust your life to me. I won't adjust my work to you. And that's a hard thing. That's the reason it's number two. And that's the reason most of us mess up, because what we do is we spend all that we, like the man said, we spend all of our bills and our few wants, and then we come to church and say, man, I'm just going to have to give this morning. It's all I got. No, it's not. It's just all that's left for the God that you say is the most important thing in your life. And most of us end up with our budgets starting off wrong. Find out what you make. Give God the part that He says, that's mine. I blessed you with a job. I blessed you with your health. And I've got a work that I want to do. I don't want the church to ever have to beg for lights. I don't want to have to beg so that they'll have a youth pastor. I don't want them to beg so that somebody will take care of the kids' church. I don't want them to beg when they say, you know what, we got to go to inner city and we got to be able to feed those inner city kids and bring them to church and drive them on buses on Wednesday night. I don't want them to say, guys, we can't afford gas to take. No, no. If everybody does their part, then you know what? The ministry gets done. That's all. And nobody has to ever beg or ask, or we just do ministry. And what you do with the rest of it, I don't care. You can give it to Jesse to plan us. You can do whatever you want to do with it. I don't care. I have to budget off of what God says. Tim, here's what I blessed you with. The third thing is called savings. Look at the person beside you and say, savings. If you don't save, then you will never get ahead. You can't put down how much you make. I'm going to give God His part. And then, woo, look at that, I get to spend all of this. Wrong. Anywhere from 5 to 10% needs to go up in savings. Well, bro, Lord, I can't afford it. Sure you can. You ain't got a bill yet. You know how much you make. You know how much you got to save. You know how much goes to God. Then when I'm through with that, I move to the fourth thing. My bills. My bills are adjusted by what I have left to live on. It's called a margin. I live within a margin. Now, I'd like to look at you and tell you that I've got this down pat, but I haven't done a very good job as a leader in my home. I really haven't. I'm a silent partner most of the time. But I'm telling you, as clearly as I can this morning, this is the way God intends for us to live our lives and to be happy, so that whether we've eaten bologna or we eat steak, we'll be content. Whether we live in a 1,600-foot house or we live in a 300,000-foot house, we'll be content. I want every one of you to prosper. I want your jobs to increase. I want your savings to increase. I want you to get to go on cruises. I want you to get to go on vacations. I want you to get to go. But I'm going to tell you this. worst thing I have to deal with every day of my life as a pastor is somebody that comes into church or comes into my office with that long face and say, Pastor, I can't pay my car note. I can't pay this. And I start to look at their life, and I look at all the loans that they've gotten out. I look at all the indebtedness. I look at all the credit cards. I look at the fact that they don't make nowhere near that kind of money. And then I have to look at them and say, look, you can't live like this. You can't live like this. Something's got to give. Of course, I'd love for them to hug my neck and say, Pastor, you're so wise. But I'll tell you what happens. They sull up and they walk up out of my office like, how dare him tell me I can't have all this? How dare him tell me I can't live this way? How dare him? And they'll find somebody other credit company to loan them some more money to keep them floating for another month or two. When all that they're doing in their life is digging a deeper and deeper and deeper debt. It is one of the hardest areas in our life to work on is our finances. But I promise you this, when you get them under control, it makes every other part of your life enjoyable. It makes the marriage enjoyable. It makes the kids enjoyable. It makes eating enjoyable. It makes drinking Kool-Aid enjoyable. It makes every aspect of your life enjoyable. And I haven't perfected it yet. But I'm working hard to get there. And all I can do is give you the plan. All I can do is tell you this is how it works. Go back with me one more time to Luke 16. I want to read that. And I'm through. Verses 10 through 12. He that is faithful in that which is least is also faithful in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in the much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? I don't care who I talk to or when I talk to them. Every one of us in this room are dealing with our finances in a different way. Some of us in here need to budget. Some of us in here need to budget better. Some of us in here, we've got a total overhaul. Some of us in here have some enormous stresses. And all I've given you today is the understanding of how you have to work at it. Quit buying all the advertisement gurus that tell you if you don't do this, it's not right. Quit letting credit companies and credit people tell you that you're actually getting by when all you're doing is prolonging you're dead. In fact, you're increasing it by 20% down the road. Some people buy groceries and pay for them 10 times before they eat them. Before they're paid for, they've, on a credit card, bought groceries that will be gone in 2 weeks and are still paying for the groceries they bought a year ago. And you say, God, I want you to bless me. God, I want you to help me. God says, learn to be faithful over what I've given you. And then I'll put in your hands things that are your own. Doesn't matter which book you buy. Doesn't matter where you start. Every one of us in this room, the biggest stressor that we have is our finances. It's learning to live where we are. As you stand this morning, I want to pray that God will assist you in doing that. I really don't know how to close this thing today. I really don't. Because I put a lot of thoughts in your heads that you've got to go home and deal with. And some of these conversations between husbands and wives and some of these things are going to be extremely hard. Because if you've got a spender in your house, they don't want to hear saving. They don't want to hear budget. They don't like budget. That word's just a dirty word. But somebody's got to have that conversation. Because otherwise the stress in the home is going to continually eat. Some of us in here, even though we're single, we're by ourselves, we've got to get a handle on it, because if we don't, it's just the constant pounding in our life of bills and bills, and we never get to enjoy the things that God's put in our lives. Will you bow your heads? Father, Lord, this morning,